you guys, Flickers of Fear time once again. So today I actually wanted to talk about the movie The Other Lamb. Now this movie, I guess it premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival back in autumn of 2019 and then was kind of picked up for distribution. So it actually, the interesting thing about this was that it was released, I believe, in the US in April of 2020, like right around the time of all the, you know, COVID shutdowns and everything. So it was very strange that because it was briefly released in the theater and it was actually for a time the third highest grossing movie that had been released, even though it only made like less than $5,000 because so few people went to see it. So I just thought that was an interesting little piece of trivia. So yeah, so this movie, I actually watched it on Hulu. I'm sure you can probably watch it some other places as well. And I was kind of interested in seeing it because I don't know, I had just kind of heard a lot of things about it, and it seemed very like folk horror and, you know, kind of about a cult and stuff. And I'm always kind of really into that kind of stuff. So I was glad I finally got to watch it. I will say, okay, I'm going to say like right from the outset, if you liked Midsommar, if you liked The Witch, if you like this kind of like real slow burn, like this really visually rich sort of, you know, but stuff where it's mostly visual, there's not a lot of dialogue, it's not real action packed, it's not real gory or anything like that. It has like some unsettling images and things like that at various points, but it's not, I don't even know if I guess it's sort of like a horror movie, but it's more, like I said, it's more like folk horror, or it's more like a weird, unsettling, nightmarish sort of drama that has like horror elements to it. So just kind of know that going into it's very kind of arty, and you know, because I usually like that kind of thing, but I know a lot of people don't, and it's, you know, I'm not judging or anything like that. I'm just saying that that's the kind of movie it is. So if that does not sound like something that you want to watch, then maybe you should skip this one. Also has some Handmaid's Tale elements to it too, so you might be into that. So this was actually directed by, and I'm sure I'm going to pronounce her name wrong, so please forgive me, but it's, I think it's Małgorzata Zamowska, and she's a Polish film director. She's made films before. This is her first English language film. Now, when I was first watching it, the young woman that plays the main character, Sela, her name is Raffi Cassidy, and I was like, man, she is so, so familiar. And the reason that I saw her, the reason that I knew who she was because I had seen her in Vox Lux. She was also in Killing of a Sacred Deer, the Yorgos Lanthimos movie, which I actually haven't seen yet, but it's on my list. I'm going to be reviewing it in a month or something like that. I can't remember where it is on the schedule, but it is coming up because I've been wanting to see that for a long time too. And it also stars, again, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong too, but I guess like Michael Heisman? I don't know. He's from Game of Thrones, and he's Dutch, so I'm sure I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. So, as I said, this is a very folk horror, it's a cult horror, essentially. So the setup of the movie is that Sela, she's a teenage girl. You're presuming she's 14, something like that. And she has been in this cult presumably since she was born, because she does talk to one of the other women that's in the cult later on, and they talk about her mother, who presumably died in childbirth. You know, you kind of find out some different shit later on. But so she's been in this cult her whole life. Now, the interesting thing about this cult, so it's all women, but, you know, the main guy who is just called the shepherd. So he's this Jesus looking dude. He thinks he's Jesus, obviously. And he has essentially a harem. And there are, I don't know, I guess probably like maybe 20, 24, like maybe a couple dozen women and girls in his flock, as he calls it. And they are divided into wives and daughters, or sisters, they call them that as well. And so they have like these color-coded outfits. So like the daughters and the sisters, who presumably are, you know, pre-menstrual, you know, so they're pre-pubescent, they wear kind of like blue dresses, you know, kind of just those long prairie sort of 19th century kind of dresses, and, you know, little green coats over it, whereas the wives wear red. They don't really tell you where this is set. It's basically this cult. They live out in the middle of nowhere. It's just this kind of collection of cabins out in the wilderness. At first, when I was watching it, I thought it was maybe the Pacific Northwest or something like that. And I saw later that they actually shot it in Ireland. I guess I didn't realize it was Ireland because, I don't know, I just associate Ireland with like being a lot more, the green and stuff being a lot more vibrant. But I guess like the cinematography, they kind of like leached some of the color out. I think they did that because one of the most striking things about this movie, at least from a visual standpoint, is how the very saturated colors of the women's clothing is really like contrasted against this sort of, you know, this sort of desaturated, but still beautiful background of this, you know, forest and mountains where they live. So they don't really say where they are or how they got there, how long this has been going on. You're kind of presuming that the shepherd, you know, the guy that's kind of like the head of the cult, even though he doesn't really look all that old, he's probably, I want to say mid-30s. I'm not really sure how old that actor is, but he doesn't look very old. But he must have been doing this for at least 14 or 15 years at this point, because they don't really say. There's a couple of little girls in the cult, you know, maybe like 8 or 9 years old. And you're presuming that he fathered those with some of his wives. And you're presuming also that he fathered Sela, but I'm not entirely sure about that. I mean, I thought that was the implication. But see, that's the thing. It's like there's a lot of stuff about this, and I'm not sure if I found it like detrimental to the movie or not, that there's a lot of stuff about the cult that is left to your imagination. Let's say that. Like I said, you don't know which of the, you know, daughters or sisters or whatever in the cult that he fathered, if these are people that came to him later. Like, for example, like maybe some of the older wives, maybe they already had a daughter and he got both of them involved in it or whatever. They don't really get a lot into that. They don't really get a lot into their belief system. It is presumably some kind of fundamentalist Christian-y type of thing, but it's not super specific. It is kind of like, you know, your basic patriarchal, you know, I'm the dude in charge of everything and you guys are all my wives. And, you know, so it's very sister wives-y kind of Mormon-y kind of stuff where, and he's just like, I'll pick, you know, they have their communal meal or whatever. And then after the meal's over, he'll come and like pick which wife he wants to sleep with that night. And, but then there's like creepy shit happening too, because as soon as one of the younger girls, like the, you know, the sister daughters, whatever, as soon as they start getting their period, then he starts looking at him like, now I'm going to need you to like replace like some of these wives that are getting too old for me. So it's just this really, really terrible kind of situation. You know, so it's like super, super creepy. Another thing too is that, and I really, really liked this visual, and I'm sure it's maybe a symbolic of something, but I couldn't really think of what it was. But every time he, like every room that they have and every time he gives like a sermon or something like out in the forest, like the place that he gives a sermon out in the woods is like, there's all this string and it's like, and it kind of goes around all the trees. So it's almost kind of like making a room, but it's like out of string. And then in the dining hall, there's like string all over the ceiling, almost like a cat's cradle. So I don't know if it's something like symbolic of maybe a spider's web or, you know, something like that, because that was kind of the first thing that I thought of. The one that's out in the woods doesn't look like a spider's web. It just looks like a bunch of string, like in a box sort of shape. But the one that's up in the dining hall definitely gives a spider web type of vibe. And there is like a very deliberate shot of him standing up from the table before he picks the wife for that night. And you can see, you know, the crisscrossing cat's cradle strings like on the ceiling, like over him. So I do kind of feel like maybe that was the symbolism there, that it's just kind of like this web that you can't escape. So some of the girls, including Sela, the main character, she has been born in this cult, so she doesn't know any different. So when we start, she's just right on the cusp of womanhood, I guess. And the shepherd seems like he's taken kind of a shine to her. And he gives her a really important task where she's supposed to oversee this one, because they also have like a small little flock of sheep that they tend to. And there's, you know, one ram as well, which is, again, a metaphor for the cult being one ram, one dude. And then, you know, the rest of the cult members are women and they're like under his control or whatever. So she's kind of given the task to go help out this pregnant ewe give birth to her lambs. So she takes this as a very important, kind of job, which it is. And, you know, at least at the beginning, just like all the other women in the cult, everyone's kind of like vying for his affection. I don't want to make it seem like in the movie, like, oh, everybody's backstabbing bitches or anything like that. It's nothing like that at all. But everybody is kind of trying to gain favor with him because they see him as like this messianic sort of figure. So there is like little petty jealousies. And so, like, you know, one of the wives says some smart ass comment about, you know, remember when he used to look at us like that when he's looking at the younger girls, you know, because now the wives are in their 40s or 50s or whatever, and they're not young and beautiful anymore. So he's, you know, moving on to younger targets. So, you know, they make little statements like that, but it's not overdone or anything. So she goes out to do this thing with the lamb, and she ends up on the mountain and she falls asleep. And you're not entirely clear, because the thing about this, if this movie has like kind of a surreal aspect as well, there's a lot of, you know, sort of visions. There's a lot of like nightmare imagery. There's, you know, imagery of her in a river, like with a white gown on. She's either being baptized or she's drowning. There's a lot of shots of like dead animals. Like she sees a bird, like a dead bird that's covered with maggots and things like that. So you're not real clear. I mean, it's pretty clear what the symbolism is, but you're not really sure sometimes what exactly happened. Because when she gets this, you know, this duty to go and help this ewe give birth, she messes it up somehow. So she falls asleep, and then the ewe gives birth, and either the sheep died on its own, or she claimed later that she fell asleep and a wild dog came and got one of the lambs and killed it. But then there was some shots of her stabbing the lamb as well. I don't know if that was like stabbing it because she was like, yeah, because it was suffering or whatever. But in any case, she kind of messes it up, you know, and that kind of leads to her being punished for that, kind of leads her on this sort of journey to sort of questioning the authority of the shepherd and seeing how maybe this situation that they've put themselves in is kind of fucked up. So this, I would call it, it's sort of like a coming of age type of story, you know, her kind of owning not only her womanhood, because at some point, you know, she gets her period and she's like freaking out because this cult, they have a thing where, you know, it's Eve's sin and, you know, you're impure and you have to go to the menstrual hut or whatever. It's like that kind of thing. So you have to go there like every time you get your period, they stick you out in the hut because you're like unclean or whatever. And nobody wants to touch you. And, you know, you're contaminating everything. So it does have that sort of thing. But, you know, once you've had that happen to you also, that means you're fair game for Shepherd. Like then you can graduate to being one of his wives and you can get his grace, you know, meaning the D. That's what the grace is. So probably the instigating incident too is that at some stage, as I said, I'm presuming they just found this place out in the woods, like all these abandoned cabins or whatever. Like I said, I don't know how long they've been there. You're led to assume that it's probably been at least a decade because some of the, you know, younger girls seem to have grown up there and they don't know any other home. So they've been living there for however long. But one night, and this is the moment that you know that this isn't set like a long time ago, that this is actually kind of set in the modern day. Sela is looking out the window one night and she sees that a cop car has pulled up to the compound or whatever and is talking to the shepherd and basically saying, you can't hear a lot of what they're saying, but the cop is basically, well, you have to leave. So I don't know if they have to leave because they're trespassing or if somebody heard about their shenanigans or whatever it was. But in any case, I assumed it was trespassing or they were on federal land or something like that. But they, you know, they don't give a reason. They just say, you have to get off this land. So they all kind of pack up and leave. And I think during this journey, because most of the movie is comprised of this, you know, obviously they're all just like camping and walking and shit like that. They don't have cars or wagons or anything. They just all have backpacks and they're kind of looking for a new place. And it becomes very obvious that the shepherd, he's supposedly leading them to a new place and he's all happy and we're going to go to Eden and all this other stuff. But obviously the fucker doesn't know where the fuck he's going. And he's just kind of hopes that he like stumbles upon a good new place or whatever. So doubt and dissension kind of start, you know, making their way, particularly Sela, not so much the other girls, although some of them are kind of get a little weirded out too, especially when a couple of sort of tragic things happen along the path. And like I said, this is a fairly new movie, so I don't really want to spoil it for people. I'm not going to spoil the end or the plot points or anything. But something really bad happens while they're on the journey. And that kind of makes some of the women question his leadership as well. And probably one of the most significant things is Sela's relationship with this woman named Sarah, who was apparently one of the first women to join the cult. It was actually her and Sela's mom. Now, Sela had never knew her mom because her mom supposedly died when, you know, giving birth to her. So Sarah, you know, so she's kind of like, she's older. Now, at some point, she did something that pissed off the shepherd, and he basically cursed her. They, you know, the other women in the cult call her the cursed woman, and she kind of has to live in another, you know, in another cabin, like away from the others. And, you know, the shepherd calls her a broken thing, but no one really knows what her sin was. All she said was it was her vanity. So I don't know if she knows what she quote unquote did wrong, like to piss him off, or if it was just some kind of thing where, you know, he decided he didn't like her for some reason, so he just had to make up some bullshit reason. I imagine it's the second thing. You know, so she's kind of been cast out, and she still hangs around the group because she doesn't really, I mean, they have a conversation, her and Sela, and she's just basically like, well, I've been here so long that I don't know who I am anymore, so I'm kind of like afraid to leave, essentially saying that she doesn't really have anywhere else to go. You know, Sela's relationship with her is kind of like a big catalyst for, you know, what ends up happening toward the end. And like I said, things start getting worse and worse and more horrific and everything. And I won't spoil too much of it because if you're real into kind of art house horror, if you like The Witch, if you like kind of folk horror-y kind of stuff, you would really, really probably dig this. I will say the story, it doesn't have like a real, I mean, the story's compelling, but there's not a lot to it. A lot of it is visuals. Now, some of the symbolism, I feel like was kind of a little on the nose, you know what I mean? Basically being, you know, sheep, flocks, you know, kind of coming of age, blood sacrifice, you know, growing up, womanhood, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's not like real deep or anything like that. And it doesn't go too much, as I said, into the history of the cult or where all these different women came from, why they stay there, why they joined. You're just kind of coming at it really just kind of in the middle of things. You don't really know most of these women's names. It's like, you don't really know, you know, where they came from, what their problem was, how long they've been there, what their beliefs are and all these other things. But in a way, I don't know. I kind of feel like some reviews that I read had a problem with that. They're just kind of like, well, you know, maybe they should have gone a little bit more into the dynamics of this cult, like what makes these women stay there despite the conditions, you know, which you can probably imagine. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's a cult led by one dude who thinks he's like a Jesus figure. And he has all these wives and daughters who will pretty much just do anything to please him. So you can pretty much imagine where that goes. You know what I mean? So it's not like reinventing the wheel. If you've seen any kind of like cult movie like this, I don't know. So I kind of found the cult aspect like intriguing, but it is a little thin in the sense that you wanted to know more. You wanted to know more about, you know, what happened with Sela's mom, what happened with Sarah, the cursed woman, like what happened, you know, why did she get kind of cast out, but she still kind of stays there. I mean, I think her character and Sela's character are the most well-developed. Because at least they have a couple of conversations and you can kind of see where they're coming from. But the other women, you're not really sure, you know, what their backstories were. And I'm not saying that it needed to be bogged down in all of that, like with exposition and blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe it's better that it was kind of just left ambiguous. And, you know, the whole thing with all the strings and everything like that and how long the cult's been going on, where this was, you know, how did he end up that way? You know what I mean? Like, what's his origin story? So I do kind of feel like I wanted to know more about that. But then when I think about it, I'm kind of like, if that had been in the movie, would it have just like bothered me? Like, oh, I didn't need to know that. Because sometimes I say like with movies like this, this kind of just like visually arresting, sort of unsettling story, sometimes it's better to just leave stuff unexplained. I mean, even though people will complain about it, but as I said, it's almost kind of like you're taking a peek into this cult that exists. And if it was real life and you were kind of just like a fly on the wall and you were watching them, they wouldn't be expositing about where they came from and their histories or anything like that. So in that way, it's kind of like a little bit more realistic, I guess. But yeah, like I said, too, this is kind of like there's a lot of surrealist sort of stuff in this. I'm, you know, not crazy, but she, Sela in particular, has a lot of visions or nightmares, things like that. And at one point, like one really weird one where she's kind of standing on the mountain when they're, you know, kind of marching toward wherever their new Eden is going to be. And they've been like walking for days and days. And she sees on the highway, she sees a car go by that has a girl sitting in the back, like just a regular teenage girl with a Letterman's jacket or whatever, that it looks just like her. Well, because it's played by the same actress, but you know, so it looks just like her. So you're assuming, I mean, obviously that's not her because she was born in the cult. So she's having a vision perhaps of what her life could have been like, or if she leaves the cult now, what her life could be like potentially in the future. So there's a lot of kind of dreamlike imagery that's not really, you know, set off from the regular imagery. So like I said, you know, like with the scene of her like stabbing the lamb, you're not entirely sure if that happened or if she was telling the truth and a wild dog really did get it. You know, so there's that kind of thing too. A lot of stuff is not explained. And as I said, I'm not sure that it necessarily had to be, but your mileage may vary on that. Now, I will say this isn't, it is very similar to the witch. It's kind of like the witch crossed with Handmaid's Tale, sort of, it, you know, kind of like that, with a little bit of Midsommar in there as well. So if you like those movies, you'll probably dig this one as well. I don't think it's quite as good as those, but it's up there. I mean, I found it really beautiful to look at. And there was just this sort of creepy, like underlying sense of menace the whole time. I think the guy that played the shepherd was actually really good because he didn't even have to be overtly abusive, but he just had this kind of undercurrent of menace. It's like, yes, he did like some abusive shit, obviously abusive shit, like later on, but for a long time, he was just very soft-spoken, but he was just very menacing nonetheless. So I think it was like a really good performance. But you know what? Raffi Cassidy, though, she kind of stole this movie. I mean, she just has this, you know, her facial expression. She just has this kind of luminous looking face. And you could just see, because she didn't really talk all that much, but you could kind of see like all her internal conflict and stuff like that just going on behind her eyes. You know what I mean? Like in her facial expression. So it was like a really, really good performance, I thought. As I said, the visuals are beautiful. I really, really liked the juxtaposition of all the wives and daughters' dresses, which were solidly colored and very like saturated, against this sort of washed out mountainous, forest kind of background. I thought it was really, really visually striking, and it looked really cool. And, you know, a lot of the nightmare imagery was really interesting. And like I said, it's not a scary movie. It's not scary. It's more, I don't know, it's more like disturbing, I guess, or just kind of an unsettling sort of film in that sort of line. So, you know, if that sounds like something that you would be into, then go on over to Hulu, at least if you're in the U.S. I don't know about other countries, but if you're in the U.S., it's on Hulu at the moment as of this recording. So check it out and let me know what you thought about it in the comments, and I will talk to you guys on the next one. Bye.